and welcome to the Freaking Awesome Podcast. It is Tuesday, May 8th, 2018. I'm Benjamin Abaya, and joining me today is my fugitive of a twin brother, John Abaya.
I didn't do it, Ben. I really didn't do it. It was the one-legged man, or the person with the biohazard company that I didn't know about, but
it's pharmaceutical.
Pharmaceutical company that I was surprised in the third act. Yeah, Ben, I didn't do it.
Okay, that's a good Harrison Ford, I guess, impression. Or are you doing the classic fugitive?
I didn't shoot first. Or I get off my plane. I can't do a Harrison Ford. That's hard to do.
Yeah,
I can do.
You're doing what's his name?
Oh, John Stewart. Yeah, the guy from the Christmas Story that everyone knows about.
Yeah, not Christmas Story. we're doing the all the
Jimmy Stewart. Yeah. It wasn't me. It was the one-armed man.
Yes.
Yeah.
Anyway, talking about that's a really good impression, I guess. So how are you, John?
Pretty good. It is summer here in Sacramento. I'm really surprised about it. It is super hot. I don't know about you, but I'm having hot flashes right now. It's hot in my room. Not hot flashes, but it's just really hot in outside. And even with the air conditioning, it doesn't really do anything for me. I have like 4 fans in my house going on at once. My electric bill will be up the roof. Or through the roof, okay. Not up the roof.
I'm not actually that. It's warm, but it's not hot.
I don't know.
I think we have different. We always have different temperatures. Body.
I wish it was like a cool 72 degrees.
Yeah, because I mean, you wear shorts, even though it's like cold. So
I don't know what type of body temperature.
I think 80 or above is like hot for you.
Yeah.
Well, for me, I think 100 is like 105 is probably like hot for me.
Okay, that's extremely hot.
Yeah. Anyway, speaking of hot, if you're new to the podcast, we usually discuss and give our impressions of what we watched, listened, played, or read throughout the week, and we conclude the episode with a main discussion. This week's main discussion is the Netflix film, Manhunt, which is directed by John Woo. I don't know that's how you say it, but we're looking forward to that. Are you a fan of John Woo, John?
A lot of action movies, yes, I'm a fan of. Mostly like Face Off, I guess. Is that one of his?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So his movies are kind of hard for me to know which one's which. I know he did the Mission Impossible 2 with the motorcycle.
That's
scene.
His. He usually has ridiculous set pieces, set pieces, and gunfights.
So I have to admit, I never watch.
They call it.
Okay, I never watch any of his Chinese films. So I don't know.
Also, like the killer.
No, which one's the killer? The one that looks guy that looks like a Joker. No, Itchy the Killer. I was thinking about
that's Itchy. That's even a different director.
Yeah, it's a whole different director. I never seen
Hard Boiled.
No, I heard that's a really good one.
Yeah, Hard Boiled is like his well known because there's like a crazy continuing track shot for like lasts like almost like 3-4 minutes.
I need to look for that one. I heard that's one of the best ones.
Yeah, it's like going through like a hospital or anything.
Oh, wow.
It's like a gunfight through a hospital hallways. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty cool. Good. From the 80s or something.
Oh, wow. It's that older?
Yeah. But before all that, before we do any of that, we're going to do what we've been doing this past week. And we're going to do, first of all, a music video talk. This is going to be different from what we usually do is a trailer talk. Because there's a cool music video that came out over the weekend. And that music video is from Childish Gambino. And that video is titled, This Is America. So that is a snippet from the music video This Is America by Childish Gambino, directed by his longtime collaborator Hiro Murai. I apologize. But he collaborates with him on Atlanta, the television show on FX. So he's primarily the director of that show. This song features Young Thug, Slim, Jixme. These are some of these rappers I don't know. Blockboy, JB, 21 Savage, everyone knows him, and Quavo, to pronounce it correctly. This debuted during Charles Gambino's appearance on SNL over the weekend. Not on the actual show, but he did sing it in the show itself. But the video came out, I think, before the actual episode. Anyway, John, are you a fan of Childish Gambino? And what's your thoughts about this video, This Is America?
I am a fan of Childish Gambino. I think we had actual Donald Glover as one of our most freaking awesome person.
Why did you mention Donald Glover? I don't understand.
Oh, those are two different Donald people. Glover. Yeah, sorry. His friend Donald Glover, we had that he always talked about Childish Gambino. I'm a huge fan. I really like his previous two albums, right? He has only two?
Yeah.
I only know two of his albums. They're both very different from one another. One's mostly straight rap, and the other one's more experimental, I could say. It still has rap elements to it, but it's I like the second one more than the first. You see his growth, and from this song, he's extremely growing into someone that is... I can see in the future that eclipse other artists, mainly one that has alternative views that we've seen recently. That I'm happy that we have Childish Gambino here having this type of music. And this video is very powerful, especially the imagery that is just very, I don't know, it's not stunning, but it's very in your face. I don't know how would you describe that, but I didn't know what I was going to be watching, but just judging by the title, This Is America, and just seeing like a glorified violence, you could say, in his video, and just the way he mostly showed in the video, it's if you watch it to the listeners, it's basically, he does rap. He does a rap style that it's hard to understand at times the way it's that, it's a newer rap
mumble
style.
Rap.
Yeah, mumble rap. But yes. if you just listen very carefully, you can understand what's happening. And the visuals actually shows like the, I don't know, it's just very, not chaotic, but it's just, so like one of the things that I've seen, like the first viewing this, I noticed like when it goes into the chorus, I guess there's like a gunshot, like a, I don't know if that's in the actual song or only
that's
in the
not
video.
In the actual song, it's just in the video.
Okay, so but in the video there's a reason for that, and that it's basically shooting, and they're mostly shooting Black Americans, and they show first this, I think, school kids, right, in their school uniform. And then yes. The second one was this church, and it's a choir.
Well, no, the first one wasn't. It's just a man playing guitar.
Oh, yes, yes. And he gets the gun, like execution style.
Yeah, basically it's an execution.
Yeah, yes. Yes. And then the other one is the school kids in their school uniforms.
No, they were just in the video.
Oh, what was the one? I have to rewatch this video.
I think it's just because how... like thought-provoking everything. I think you're thinking that's a really
but
good
he did way of... gun down the choir. That's what
and then
it just reminds me of like the recent shootings that we had, especially at Charlottesville was the one with the church, right? There's so many. I'm like forgetting. I'm sorry for that. Then the most recent one with the shooting at the high school. Douglas High School. I'm like blank-minded right now, these are my thoughts. But yeah, it's just very powerful video. And then especially the ending with him running reminded me just straight from like Get Out. I don't know. It's just very, that imagery of him running away really quickly. And then you see this like mob of people either chasing him or running with him. But his look is just very scared and just like he just feels scared. He looks scared. And
like he's escaping.
Yes, yes.
Escaping. From a certain situation.
Yes. Yeah. It just, that video got me rattled, and I watched it several times, and I will watch it again because I feel like I forgot major things about the video. But yeah, those are my thoughts.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with you. It does rattle you. It challenges you. It does invoke like a sense of what we have become as Americans, I guess you could say, during this certain time, especially with this certain administration. But also it's about like the Black experience in America. Mm-hmm. I think it's intentional that most of what he showed were people of color, but mostly Black people. And I'm just thinking like, oh, wow, this is very thought-provoking and everything. And then we could unpackage the entire music video and we could interpret all this stuff in the video. But I think what like so many people have done, like several people have done on the internet, I think you could go online and seek that out and rather listen to them and read about what their interpretations are, because mm-hmm. I think
yep.
It will do more justice than us just talking about the whole thing. But I want to be more put the spotlight on more of like Childish Gambino and his performance and like the nuances he's like evoking and how the messages might like provoke many folks about, especially about like gun violence, especially like when from those two scenes of him executing someone who's playing music and then also mass killing people who are just playing music or singing music too. And I think there are those lines there of surrealism, I guess you could say,
yes.
That he's trying to say something, but it's whatever we interpret as. And I think that, like, with the nuances, might I add, like his eyes are twitching. Whenever he has like a handgun or a gun that's handed to him, you get very like oh wow, like shocked, or like just his like peculiar dances in a sense of like. It is like the dances you see in how people in memes and whatnot, like some of the dances he's recreating too.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like there's a message there. And then I don't want to get into it, but at the same time, it's like engaging, troubling, but also like kind of funny in some sense. Funny in a very like serious, like, haha, like, oh, wow, that's really serious. Like you don't want to laugh, but at the same time, there's some like, some fun moments in that music video. But yeah, that is This Is America from Childish Gambino. We highly, highly advise everyone to at least watch it and then, you know, share your thoughts, what you think of it and what's your, you know, reaction to it, I guess you could say. So moving on, John, you've been doing a couple of things. What have you been doing this past week?
I've been playing I've been reading a new arc for the Spider-Man. It hasn't ended yet. I'm very excited. It will end this May 30th. It's basically Dan Slott's last run of the Amazing Spider-Man book. So he's going to be not retiring, but he's going to be moving on. I believe he's going to be writing the Fantastic Four book. That's going to be the new Marvel. And I don't know when they're going to release it, but he's heading to that. Basically, and so this is his last run, his last few books that he's issues that he'll be writing, and these issues are called Go Down Swinging, and right now it's I only read up to part 3, I believe, and there's a part 4 that'll be coming out, like I said, on May 30th. It will conclude the story of what's happening. And basically, the conclusion will be the Amazing Spider-Man 800. That will it's a anniversary issue. And then the story so far is basically Norman Osborn is back. He disappeared a while ago. He actually didn't have the Goblin Serum, or Peter or Spider-Man, whatever, which one you want to call it, got rid of the Goblin Serum or the Goblin persona from Norman Osborn, so he didn't have it. And for a while, he's been looking for a way to bring that back. And he kind of encounters a famous symbiote, or last week's episode, symbolite. I forgot how Jenny Slate said it, but I have to say it that
symbolite.
Way. Symbolite. Yes. So he encounters the red one, so the Carnage one. So the Carnage one actually helped him get back his the persona back of the Green Goblin. So he becomes the Red Goblin, and he gave, in the last couple issues, it's basically him. He knows Spider-Man's true identity, Peter Parker, and he's terrorizing his normal life, and he gave him like an ultimatum of, I will not kill you, Spider-Man, unless you stop being Spider-Man. I won't kill you, Peter Parker, unless you stop being Spider-Man. He's like, it's not the person that you are, Peter Parker, that I hate. It's the secret identity. So he gave him a choice. If he stops being Spider-Man, he will not hurt him or anyone he loves. But if he continues to be Spider-Man, he'll basically try to kill everyone he knows, love, even down to like the mailman and whatnot. So I'm excited to see the conclusion of that. It's very exciting. I jumped on to Dan Slott a couple years ago. I think I've been discussing about him or his issues the whole time since we returned to the Freaking Awesome podcast. And he's the only Amazing Spider-Man writer I know that I've been reading about. So it's exciting to see what he'll continue to do. And I forgot who's continuing it. It's another famous writer. I want to say Mark Waid, but I might be super wrong about that. But yeah, it's just looking forward to this, ending basically of Spider-Man or his thing. It's not Mark Waid. Sorry. I just looked it up. Mark Waid is doing Captain America. I have no idea who's doing the next 801, but yeah, I'm excited about that. Also, I watched a new, not new, it came out last year on Netflix called Re-Mine, and Re has the it's R-E with the two dots. I don't know what you call
those. Colon. It's
colon?
Remember, I always made it as a joke in the podcast when there's like a television show or a film that has a colon. I always say, like, Independence Day, colon, resurgence.
Oh, okay. So this one's R-E colon mine, or if you can read it, Re-Mine. So, Ben.
Okay, I get it.
Huh?
I get it.
Remind, okay, Re-Mine. Yeah. I don't understand why this title has a colon. I don't know why does it have that. They do mention the word Re-Mine in the show. But basically, it is a escape room with a mystery surrounding these 11 schoolgirls that are trapped in this dinner room. And the whole series is mostly taking place in this one dinner room, and they are chained up into their seats on their ankles, so they can't get out. So they have to talk their way out of it, basically, and see why are they trapped inside this room. And it's 11 or 13 episode series. Okay, so my wife and I decided to watch this because the imagery and the trailer look interesting. And I forgot the other part of this show. It's actually a teen drama, too.
What?
That we did not think we'll be getting to. So, like I said, most of it takes place in this room, but they do flashbacks. Most of the time, it's the cold open is a flashback. And I'm going to spoil this show only because I don't think it's a great show, but it's it's an interesting experience to have just watching the show and just how the mystery unfolds. I can see America actually remaking this and making it much more bloodier, I guess you say, or not bloodier. I don't know. It's just, yeah. So the whole, like I said, it's about this mystery of why they're there. And then each episode basically gets rid of one girl in each episode, but they tell you why. So these girls are in this group called Justice or Perfects. They're called the Perfects. So what they do is they do perfect justice. So say that the girls see that someone has expired meat. This is actually in the show. Expired meat in the store. So what they do is they take the meat and throw it away. You get it? It's perfect justice. So they do stuff they think are the justice way of doing it. But it ends up basically backfiring, but because they don't know who are they affecting by doing this. And it gets into this weird, like, Lost style connections to each girl on the show. And it's very weird and surreal. And there's one part towards the ending where it becomes a music video, like a J-pop idol music video. And then the 13th episode is actually, they flip the word remind and they call it rewind. And it goes back before everything happened and where the school girls are at school and showing you all their little secrets and stuff. And that's an interesting plot device because the way they portray it made it seem like those secrets are valid or not valid, like interesting or whatever, but they're not really interesting. Like, you don't really care about the secrets. They're not too huge. Like, they don't add to the show or the story, but I don't know. If you want to watch a 30-minute show, each episode is 30 minutes that are just schoolgirls talking. I mean, the acting is fine. It's very dramatized and just the way they act is just funny sometimes. But yeah, it's a wild story with a lot of red herrings. At one point, I thought I was done. I thought we were done. And I was like, this can't be the ending. And then nope, it was an ending. Something else happened. And just, yeah, they talk about a lot of like social issues and issues when you're in high school about bullying, about cheating, about being without consent with someone if you are seeing someone. They do those things.
What made you want to watch this, though?
The trailer, straight up, the trailer looked very interesting. Like, it looked like a horror show. Like, I thought we'll say, so the show, and Netflix does these ratings now on the show. They said TVMA. This show is not... I mean, besides the content, I guess, yeah, it's TVMA, but there's no, like, nudity or bad words or whatever. It's just straight-up drama of these schoolgirls just trying to solve this mystery. And if you're a fan of Lost, if it's not about the ending, it's about the journey, you will like this. I mean, there's a part of me that kind of liked it, but there's a part of me that ending is just out there, just way out there that... I wish there's a more concrete ending. Lost had a more concrete ending than this show, but yeah. I mean, more likely, I don't know if this show will ever have like a season 2, but I'm interested if they do tell the stories again. That's it. I don't know what else to say about the show, but yeah. I don't know if you got interested in it.
I probably won't. I have other things to watch aside from that. But yeah, anyway, let's move on. I also watched something too. So a couple of weeks ago, because I wasn't here last episode with you guys when you talked to Infinity War, which I really liked. I don't want to really talk about that film. But I think I agree most of the things you guys said. I won't love the film, but I liked it enough to where I'm curious about like what will happen to the fourth Avengers film.
Hmm.
But other than that, I mean, yeah, I listened and watched something, and I attended something. So the listen and watch are actually the same thing, which was Janelle Monáe's album and her company like short film with it that's also had the same title, which is Dirty Computer.
Oh,
she calls it Emotion Picture, an emotion picture, which I think, I don't know if she coined it or something. But you've heard of Janelle Monáe, right, John?
Yes, yes. I actually listened to her album. I did not know she had a music video that's a companion piece to the album, though.
Yeah, it's a short film. It's on YouTube right now, so you can watch it. It's about 50 minutes long. Oh, that's 45 not bad. To 50 minutes long.
Do they do the style of like Kanye and Beyonce where just back-to-back songs, or is there like a...
Somewhat. Yeah, there is a narrative through the whole thing. But most of, yeah, it's basically short vignettes of music of her songs into compressed into like music videos, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, if you're familiar with her previous albums, the Arch Android, the Electric Lady, even her EPs, Metropolis Suite 1 and 2, I think there's 3 of them. So you know her like persona that she created with those albums, which was like an android,
mm-hmm.
With a certain like monolithic look. She's well known for her like hairstyles, especially her famous like pompadour, you know, like that hairstyle, John.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. It's been like 10 years since her debut and inception into like the music world, and she made like a remarkable like impact in music and film, especially in films. The past like couple years, she's been in some like very like talked about in well received films like Hidden Figures and Moonlight. I think there was another film she was in. Why do I not remember that? But yeah, so with this album, Dirty Computer, she said in numerous interviews, like, she came out as being like pansexual, and she's also said that this is the album that where she more identifies as her real self, not like this android she made up, but she's more comfortable in her skin, she's more comfortable speaking about her what she likes during like sex and herself in general. Like, she's more out there now, and if you notice, like, ever since she got into filming, she's a really good actress. Give her time, she'll be one of the greatest actresses probably. But like with this companion short film, which is really good too, and it's just basically like vignettes of her music video, you could see that talent there evolving, and just that you could see her. Especially, like, it's also talk about her being an android and whatnot, that you can see that she has all this creativity in her. It's directed by Chuck Lightning, which is also it was written by him too. It's co-directed by him, actually. I forget who the other person is. And it also stars, like, Tessa Thompson.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, well known. She's also, like, a rising star too. Yep. And yeah, seeing those two together is really good and cool to get to see those acting chops played out on screen. But overall, like, from the album to the short film, I love it. If this will most definitely be part of like the 18 freaking awesome things of 2018, which I lost the list. So next episode we'll put good that thing, together again.
Good huh? thing on the titles of the list, when we do talk about the list, I put the list on the title, so I can just go back and listen to
okay,
it.
Okay, you could do that then.
Yeah.
But some songs I want to highlight are like Screwed, Pink featuring Grimes. I like that. And Americans. I think Americans is a good companion to like This Is America too. Yeah. Like if you could watch that and watch Childish Gambino's video, it would be cool. You could tell that she has a lot of influence towards Prince in the music, and then I was like, wow, this sounds like a Prince track. Like, mm-hmm. even the way the music is created, the way the music is composed, it sounds like Prince has made it. And then in an interview right before he died, they actually worked together putting together this album. Like, this, there's bits and pieces of this album where Prince was involved with the process and finding that sound for her. So
wow.
There are several songs on this album that sounds like Prince. I don't know if you noticed that, John.
Yes. The way it starts with the boom, 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 boom.
Like yeah, that. Yeah. Like a funky yep, guitar the funky, beat. Yes. Yeah. But yeah, overall, I love it. I'm happy that this is doing great. And yeah. More power to her. So yeah, that's Janelle Monáe's Dirty Computer. You could listen to any streaming devices and whatnot. And the other thing I did, which I attended something this past weekend, was an exhibition, exhibition in a in the California Museum here in Sacramento. It was called And Still We Rise. It's about race, culture, and visual conversation. It's about 400 years of U.S. history on 67 quilts by women of color. They're called the Women of Color Quilter Network.
Mm-hmm.
This consists of Rachel Clark, Dinga McCannon, and Patricia Montgomery. So we listened, and they were presenting their pieces there in the museum, and it was very like riveting, and it was wonderful to hear them creating and putting their passion into their art. And it's also fun, like, also listening to them, because they talked about, like, some folks were like asking them, oh, do you, you know, sleep with your quilts and whatnot, and they said they do, and then some of them say it still think it's like, you know, still, it's still like textile, and like you could still wear it and whatnot. They were really pleasantly like wonderful to hear, especially like they're a little bit older, so they've been doing it for like probably 30 to 40 years now. So their experience is like way up there. But yeah, I think this is also a national tour they've been going through too. So if you have a chance, like I highly recommend attending this. It's Still We Rise, Race, Culture, and Visual Conversation. It's mostly showcasing their quilts, and then each quilt has a certain story. Like there's a story, and then it's a reflection about African-American history mostly, but also like the struggle from the time, you know, of slavery till now. Like they have a quilt for everything. But yeah, I really recommend that.
I'll check that out. If it comes, you think it will ever come to Sacramento?
It is in Sacramento.
Oh, wait. That's right. I thought you said Los Angeles for some reason. Sorry.
Oh, no. It was in Sacramento. I misheard. The California Museum.
Okay.
It's only $5.
How long is it there?
It's for this month. It's until the end of the month, the 27th, okay. I think. Yeah. I highly recommend you bring your kids because each quilt has like its own little story on the side you could read about.
Yeah, more likely I'll try to get them there this month.
And then there, upstairs, there's also a activist like exhibit too, if they want to learn about like being activists or inclusiveness and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so that is that. So we're gonna go ahead and go to our main discussion. This week's main discussion is the Netflix film Manhunt. That is a clip from the trailer of Manhunt, directed by John Woo, who directed what we mentioned, The Killer, Hard Boiled, Face Off, Mission Impossible 2. This film stars, I'm going to probably not do a great job in pronouncing all these names, but Zhang Hanyu, Masaru Fukuyama, Kyuei, Ha Ji Hwan, and Jun Kuni Mara. Oh no, I feel like I'm just mispronouncing all those names right now. But apologize if you want to come back and tell us how you pronounce them correctly. I'm doing my best because I actually make like little notes on there. Mm-hmm. Anyway, from IMDb's plot synopsis, accused of heinous crimes he didn't commit, a prosecutor sets out on a mission to clear his name. So this is a Chinese Hong Kong production. It is adapted off of a Japanese novel by Juko Nasuramaro. So John, like we talked about, you are familiar with at least his American films of John Woo. What do you think about this film, which is primarily Chinese and Hong Kong?
This film I really like. It's not the best action film I ever seen. It has a lot of his standard, I guess, tropes of the way he's film style. I do like the... I'm familiar to Masaru Fukuyama, who played Yuamaru. Well, I'm saying that totally wrong. Yuamaru.
He basically plays the cop.
Yeah, plays the cop in the movie. But, I really liked him in that movie, Like Fire, Like Sun. I recognize him right away when I saw him.
That's
like,
the one I recommended to you.
yes, I remember him. And then the other actor I know is Jun Kunumura. He plays, Kunumarara. I guess, yeah, the CEO, president of the pharmaceutical company. The father, I guess, in the movie. I also saw him in Kill Bill, Ichi the Killer, and other Asian cinema's movie I've seen. But, so... I'm used to John Woo action movies. I'm not like the biggest John Woo fan. I do like his American stuff, the way he directs, but they're not like the best, in my mind, best action movies that I've seen. I know that's probably like a bad thing to say, but the story was interesting to a point until in the third act, it gets kind of crazy with all this like odd conspiracy theory and not conspiracy, but these threads are lining up with this other story that was being told, and then they do minor spoilers about this movie, but it just gets really crazy in the third act. The first act is more of like I was doing in the beginning of the podcast, like a fugitive type story where you know the main character was framed for this, but you don't know why. And you have a feeling there's like a dirty cop somewhere, and there is, but there's a good cop, that extremely great cop, that knows how to handle any situation, it seems like. But he's also kind of connected, not connected directly, but there is a small connection. And even the cold, like open, not the cold open, like the beginning of the film, they discuss this. There's a scene where the main character, Han Zuya, or Du Kui, I think I'm saying that right, meets this woman, and then you see the connection to that. Yeah, overall, I just liked the movie. I think I have problems with the third act. It just gets too crazy for me. I like the action. They do have like doves traditionally in the movie. It is funny how they use them though.
Don't the way spoil the, it. It's a good scene.
Yeah, it's a great scene just to see that happen, and the way they play. They're not just there for like.
Do you think he's like mocking himself?
I think so. It was a very like inside joke style. Right? Yeah, yeah. I can see it, but it's a great scene just to watch that. They do kind of like do this odd. I don't know what is it, but there's like this relationship with these two assassins that gets kind of like they're in the pointless story, huh?
Pointless.
Yes, it's kind of awkward a little bit, the story of them too. Not them, but just they're just in there, and I felt like this is kind of wasteful. Like I don't even understand what's happening with these two. Like they seem like okay characters in the beginning, but then towards the end, I was like, okay, I guess this is happening. I guess they do this.
It feels like there was a prequel that we missed. Yes, two characters.
Mm-hmm, yep. Yeah. They were great in the beginning. I really liked the two characters, and the two characters we're talking about is played by Angelus Wu and I think G-Wan, huh? Right? Am I correct with that?
Or Ha G-Wan.
Yeah, Ha G-Wan played that one. And Angelus Wu is actually speaking English in this movie. I thought that was interesting, where all her lines were English. I don't know if she's an English actress too.
She is. I think they had to have some sort of a compromise with the actress.
Yeah. That was interesting. Like, and then they would reply in Chinese, so or I don't know what actually dialect they were speaking, but yeah. Overall, I thought the movie was good. It's a good action movie. It's like a good kind of like palate cleanser in a weird way after watching Infinity War, just to see the style of fighting and stuff. I don't know. It's just if you want to watch a John Woo movie that's out this year, go ahead, watch Netflix and subscribe.
I'm gonna echo almost the same remarks as you. Overall, I like the film too. It has all the sensibilities of a John Woo film. It has a slow motion, it has with like the non-stop action, the well choreographed like gunfights, themes of brotherhood.
Yes.
Working together to beat like a common threat. Also has like this absurdity throughout it all, like a very dense plot specifically about like the pharmaceutical company and basically a serum that could give you like superhuman strength.
Yeah, see, I didn't want to say that part, but that was the
okay
part.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it's okay. It's not like a really big, huge scene. It's just, it's their way to make like a superhero movie, kind of like this.
Yeah,
because this is almost, that serum is like the super soldier serum almost, and then you get to see them actually fight. Because one of the characters actually takes it, and you see the other one fight his, you know. It's almost that, like, the Iron Man Steve Rogers fight. Like, you have to fight each other to resolve this.
It's actually almost exactly the same. Because the same, I had the same chills when that happened.
Yes.
It's a bit ludicrous, the whole thing, actually. You could tell, like, the production value seems also, like, ill-conceived, like, especially during the climactic scenes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everything felt very, like, studio cheapness to it all. But I feel like that's how his old films were, where in the 80s, it felt comfortable because you're like, oh, no, like, you know, it was the 80s. And if you ever watch Hard Boiled, like, there's a famous scene in the hospital where that hospital seems like a set. It doesn't seem like a real hospital at all. And this one also, where the third act takes place, is like a laboratory of some sort.
And it's that villain-ish laboratory where there's huge tubes everywhere. Like, what does do any of these things do?
We don't even know. And then when certain enemies hit a certain like wall, all of a sudden that it's like a computer and electrifying.
It almost feels like it's a Dead or Alive stage or something.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? Like that stage in Dead or Alive with the experimental tubes and people in the background cheering. But in this scene, they have those sticks, I guess.
Yeah. But what's weird is he's also good with like cinematography.
Yeah.
Not cinematography, but mostly like framing a shot. There was this really good shot. It has to do with a wedding dress.
Oh, yes, and, yes, yes.
Like violence. And I'm like, wow, like I've probably seen that in other films, but like the way they did that shot, I was like, wow, this is really good like storytelling at that point. And then it gets ridiculous again. Mm-hmm. Where motorcycles are crashing into a house.
Yes, yes.
People are just shooting
motorcycles. And people.
Yeah.
And the enemy has no face. Only the two assassin women have a face.
And then, like, they do a lot of, like, not foreshadowing, but somewhat foreshadowing, but also, like, a little bit of flashbacks. Too many flashbacks, actually. There were, I felt very, like, I don't think we need to know all about this. But I liked it overall. It's kind of odd, like, the two main male actors had to speak English to each other, where it seems like they probably spoke, like, the same language at one point.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
like there were a couple of times where they spoke the same language, but I don't know why they had to speak English in some of the points.
Yeah,
unless I'm like missing something where they had to do that. But yeah, that is what am I starting to say?
I would also tell the listeners to check out the poster. There's a cool poster of Manhunt with like this dove, and so there's a scene in the movie where they get handcuffed to each other. So the poster, it's their hand making the bird symbol and you see a dove in front of them.
Oh,
the horses cool too. There's horses in this movie that surprisingly
There's horses too.
Yeah,
there's horses versus motorcycles.
Yes. I know. I think we are selling it right now with this movie if you want to see all
that. There's a cool remember in Mission Impossible 2 when they use bikes?
Yes, yes.
And there's a cool shot here. It's a small, minor action sequence with jet skis.
Yes.
They do the exact similar thing when Tom Cruise and whoever the villain was in Mission Impossible 2 were going at it with motorcycles. They did something similar with jet skis.
Yep.
And I don't know. I think it's just like a... It harkened back to like his classic films in the 80s where he uses like a lot of jazz music. So he does the same thing here. Yeah. Anyway, that's Manhunt on Netflix. You could watch it if you have subscribed to Netflix. But yeah, we recommend it if you just want to watch a action film. You don't even need to pay attention to everything. You just like watch the action sequence and be on awe. Yeah. But there's nothing comes close to his like action sequences in The Killer or Hard Boiled or even like a Face Off. Like if you watch, I don't know if Face Off is also on Netflix. If you rewatch that, I was rewatching some of it. It's the same ridiculousness of like the slow motion and this very like elaborate, you know, gunfight scene. But you can see where these two films are like companion pieces to each other, like a double feature. But yeah, so that's Manhunt on Netflix. So thank you for listening. John, where can they find you on the interweb?
You can find me on Twitter at the most organized Twitter feed of 2018 at AbayaArts. And yeah, that's all I have for now.
You can find me on the internet on Twitter and Instagram at Benjamin Abaya. You can find all of us on thefreakingawesome.com. You can find all our episodes on any of the streaming apps at The Freaking Awesome Podcast. And finally, you can find us on Facebook, on The Freaking Awesome, and on Twitter at TFA Now, which we retweet whatever we wanted to retweet, basically. For some of you, like, oh, why are they retweeting the Met Gala?
Met Gala would be a cool new thing.
Yeah. But I think I'm specifically a fan of, like, when it comes to fashion over there. Like, yeah, they always have a theme. And if you look at, like, recently while we were recording this, Zandala came out as
her Joan of Arc outfit.
Yeah, which is really good.
Yes, like, yes.
Yeah, because the theme has to do with heavenly and the Catholic religion in some sort, like the visuals of the Catholic religion.
I wonder how heavy that outfit was.
Yeah.
It's actually made of steel or...
Probably not. It's probably, like, colored into, like, how it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, thank you for listening. I'm Benjamin Abaya.
I'm John Abaya.
And this has been the Freaking Awesome Podcast.